Chapter number 4.
Ya-eko-varno bahuda shakti yogan varna nanika nihitarto dadati vichaiti chamde vishwam ado sadeva sano bunya shubhaya samyunaktu.
So now we're discussing in more detail how Brahman is the cause of all causes, especially the cause of all aspects of material creation. And as the style here, the chapter begins with a prayer for intelligence that is fixed upon him. Buddhya Shubhaya, auspicious intelligence, which is understood as intelligence that is inclined toward him, focused on him, and free of all traces of ignorance and delusion. That kind of intelligence. And he's glorified. Ordinary psychology, before you ask somebody for something, you flatter them first. So the Lord is praised, and then the request is made. He's called, well, this is, can be read two different ways. Eko Varno. Because of the rules of how sounds are combined, it could be either avarna, meaning he who has no form, no material form. Varna literally means color, but we understood that to mean form. Or it can mean varna. Varna without the positive sense of varna, taking the word to mean letter or sound. He's the one original sound. Okay, well, look at that. Rang Ramanuja takes that second interpretation. He is the one varna. The letter A, the first letter in the alphabet, is understood to be the origin of everything. It's the origin of all the other sounds, and everything in the world is created out of sound. Of course, this is the same kind of idea that's taught in the Hebrew Kabbalah. The letter A is the original. It's the origin of everything. But that's also in the Upanishads. Ah, the letter Ah, the first sound, is all sound. And like a fire with its expanding flame, it becomes many and creates everything. Akare Ochite Vishnu. The letter Ah in the syllable Om. Ah, U, M. The first sound Ah represents Vishnu, the Supreme Lord and Creator. And he, Shakti Yogat, by using his personal energies, he creates many forms. Or this, following this interpretation that he's the original sound, he creates all the other sounds, the whole Sanskrit language, and then everything is created on the basis of that Sanskrit language. And then in the end, he nihitartha. So nihita means placed, artha here means meaning. So the meaning of all things is contained in the name of Vishnu. Namnamakari bahudani jasarvashaktis. Lord Chaitanya prayed that to himself, that, O Krishna, you've placed all your potencies in your holy name. That includes all the potencies of material creation. Everything material is contained in Krishna's name. All ideas, all concepts, all possibilities are contained in the name of the Lord. That's the meaning of nihitartha, confidential meaning of it. And then vichayate chante, and in the end of creation, he destroys the whole world again. It's just a temporary pastime of his, like a child playing, building something and then tearing it down again. Okay, now the second interpretation given by the later commentary, taking avarna to mean having no form. Brahman is the true cause of everything. And this chapter is explaining again things that have been said before, because the absolute truth, the Supreme Person, it's not easy to understand.
So he has to be explained over and over again, even if it bores somebody as being repetitive. So here is described how he creates everything simply on the strength of his own sweet will, which is never frustrated. So, with this idea in mind, the Rishi Shvetashvatara is praying for the Lord's mercy here. The Lord who is one without a second, who is totally independent, and he has no material form, avarna, according to the second interpretation. Without having any material body, he was able to create the whole world, he can maintain it all, and he can annihilate it whenever he wants. He doesn't have to have any material instrument, any body or any senses, material senses, to do everything. He simply had his desire in his heart that he wanted to manifest this creation. And from that desire, everything evolved. By his energies. His energies understood his desire and carried out his desire. And in the end, the playful Lord withdraws everything he creates. So we pray to him, therefore, please engage us with auspicious intelligence inclined toward him and free from all contamination of illusion. Just notice that the last line of this verse is a repeat. It was there in, a chapter ago in verse 4, the third chapter, that same line was stated before.
Okay. We'll move on to the second verse.
Tadeva agnis tadadityas tadvayus tadujam brahmaho tadeva shukvam tad brahma tadapas tad prajapatihi.
He is the gods of fire. The sun, wind, moon, stars, Vedic sound, water, and the universal form.
Here what's being described is how the Supreme Person is the soul of everything.
Since everything created in this world comes from him, and everything merges back in him again, in that sense, he is everything. Nothing is separate from him.
So he and he alone is fire. Fire is the means by which Vedic Brahmins perform sacrifice and worship him. Fire in the stomach of every animal allows them to digest the food they've eaten. And we've seen before that food is the basis of material existence. Yadane nati rohati. This world is the world of everything that lives by food. But the digestion of food, the utilization of food, is only possible by the fire that is the Lord himself in the heart, in the stomach. And he alone is the sun, the great light in this universe. He's the wind. The sun is situated in the heavens, in the heavenly planetary system. The wind blows mainly in the middle planetary system, Gavarloka. That is the upper atmosphere. There's a manifestation of the Brahmajyoti also, as is the sun, but it occupies the middle part of the universe, in between the earth and heaven. And on earth, he's also present in the wind form of prana, in every living being's heart. And he is the light of the moon, and the pure light of all the stars. He is the first creator, living entity, Hiranyagarbha Brahma. He is water, the original source of creation. Lord Narayan derives his name from the water of the Garbhodak Ocean, from which he created this world. So he's the origin of that water. He's called Narayan. The water is called Nara. He's the Ayana, or the source of that water from which the universe took birth. And he is the Supersoul, Prajapati, the Lord of all creatures, the Virat Rupa. These holy things, these are his material opulences in this material world by which he creates. Three. This verse is actually quoted from the
Yajurveda, 32nd chapter, the verse we just read. Now we get more poetical. It's the ecstatic mood of Shvetashvatar that now he's going to poetically glorify the Lord. Tvam Stri Tvam Pumanasi Tvam Kumara Uttava Kumari Tvam Jirno Dandena Vanchasi Tvam Jato Bhavasi Vishvato Mukaha. You are a woman, a man, a young boy, a young girl. You are an old man walking with a cane. You are newborn Brahma. Your face is turned in every direction. So this is a matter of poetic liberty that we were talking, glorifying the Lord, and now we're talking in the second person, talking to him directly. Before it was third person, describing him from a distance. Now this prayer, or this glorification, is addressed directly to the Lord personally. With the idea that you take birth through all the forms of existence in the material world. They're all your manifestations. He's the soul of all creatures. The female principle, you're a woman, then you're a man. As Prakriti, which is an expansion of Krishna's energy, Prakriti receives the seed of the universe from the glance of Mahavishnu. She's the female principle. The Lord himself is the male, the giver of the seed. And the Lord appears variously in all the different ages, all the different phases of life. In the material world, all these creatures are his expansions, and he has his own pastimes too, of course. This is not necessarily what the sage has in mind, but we know the Lord has his childhood pastimes and so on. He usually does not appear as an old man. Maybe in the empowered incarnation of Vyasadeva, he's an old sage, in that form, perhaps. Otherwise, the Lord never becomes old. But we have no right to deny even that of him. If he wants to be an old man walking with a cane, then he can do that also. Why does the Lord appear in so many forms? Because he has multiple energies, Vishvatomagaha. He's endowed with many, many different kinds of energies. You can't stereotype him. You can't pin him down to one aspect. It's Krishna's choice that that's what he prefers to be. If he wanted to be an old man, then if he wanted that to be his primary form, it would have been. But that's our stereotype. We think God has to be only an old man. Obviously, he's the oldest, and God is not supposed to do anything. You know. So he's an inactive, senile old man, according to our preconception. But what matters is what Krishna wants, not what we want. He'll present that form to those who want to see it, but that's not his preference. Okay, we can move on because the last couple of verses are a little complex. I want to leave enough time to cover them. It is a very vivid verse and a little strange. Nila patambo harito lohitakshas tadid garba vitavapsa mudra anari matvam vibhutvena vartase yato jatani bhuvanani vishva. You are a blue bee, a green parrot, a red-eyed cuckoo. You are a cloud, the womb of lightning. You are the seasons and the oceans. You have no beginning, and by your opulences you manifest your presence. From you were born all the worlds. So it's not necessarily that a blue bee, a green parrot, and a red-eyed cuckoo are the most important aspects of material creation, but they're certainly vivid images. And the Lord is everything, including these. Neither commentator gives any secret meaning to what it means to be a dark blue bee or a green parrot or a red-eyed cuckoo, other than not only the human form of life is manifesting as a transformation of your energy, but all forms of life and everything. So also lower forms of life and inanimate objects are your manifestations. It literally says only blue, flying bird, or Fatamaka mean bee or bird. Harita just means green, but according to the commentator, we understand this to mean a blue bee, a green parrot, because sometimes Harita means a green parrot, just like in Vrindavan, all the parrots are green. And red-eyed is also sometimes understood as the name of the cuckoo bird. The womb of lightning obviously is a cloud pregnant with lightning. These are opulences, different forms the Lord takes, and different manifest products, things that he produces in the material world that are his opulences. Now, after that, I mentioned a few of his opulences in the dimension of time. The various seasons, beginning with spring, each of them has their own, you are the seasons. Each season has its own different character. There are different opulences of the Lord. Of course, Krishna says in the Gita of seasons, he's the spring, which is just now beginning here. And saying that he is the oceans, this is an allusion hinting at the Lord's infinity. Equating the Lord himself, the cause of everything, with the effects of his creation, the things that are created, equating him with the creations, this is poetic, metaphorical. We're not presenting a Mayavadi idea. He's not actually a dark blue bee, and every bee you see is not Krishna. Every red-eyed cuckoo is not a worshipable deity. This is a metaphorical presentation. There's enough strict philosophy in this Upanishad, the sage could afford a few poetic verses. No real confusion created by this.
He says it's not a
Mayavadi idea. He's not saying that everything is one. And he's not saying that, these particular birds are, divine in contrast to other birds. It's just a very graphic way of demonstrating Krishna's everything. Now we move on to an important section, the next three verses. Very famous verses, all three of these, 5, 6, and 7. So read verse 5. So after this poetic interlude, we move to a short section that's some of the most important philosophy, some of the essential philosophy of the whole Upanishad is contained here. The relationship between the Lord and his major energies, the Jiva and Prakriti. It was stated early in the first chapter, Bhokta Bhogyam Pirdatanam Chamatva, when one must understand the three aspects of Brahman, the enjoyer, nature who is enjoyed, and the controller of both. Then you can attain perfection. So now there's some detailed description of the Lord's relationship to the Jiva and to material nature. And relationship between the Jiva and material nature. Three-way relationship. Text 5.
Ajam ekam lohita shukla krishnam Bhakti kvacha svijamanam swarupaha ajo hieko jushamano nushete jahat yena bhukta bhogam ajonyaha.
There is one eternal female who gives birth to many children, red, white, and black, all resembling herself. One eternal male lies beside her, trying to enjoy her, while another eternal male leaves her aside as already enjoyed. There is a pun here. Funny play on words. The word aja means goat. So you can read this in one sense, talking about three goats. Two males and a female. Yeah. One is trying to enjoy the female goat, the other one is had enough. But the word aja also means unborn, eternal being, eternal creature. So that's the poetic translation. And the three are here. Material nature is the female. And there are two jivas involved here, two different kinds of jivas. The one who is liberated, who's not interested in material entanglement, and the one who's entangled. Those are the three people involved here. Prakriti and the two different kinds of jivas. Previously we were talking about the distinction of matter, spirit, and the Lord. Now this is a graphic image describing this relationship. Nature is a creature without any birth, she's eternal. And she gives birth to various children of different colors, red, white, and black. These represent the three modes of nature. These colors are also the different colors you can get from a flame. You know, a flame can sometimes be red, sometimes white, sometimes black, according to what it's burning. So according to what nature comes in contact with, she manifests modes of goodness, passion, ignorance, different qualities. Now there's a certain other eternal being who was never born, a jiva, but he's foolish. He doesn't have spiritual knowledge. And because of his false ego, he's trying to follow material nature and exploit her, enjoy her. Whereas another kind of living entity who is wise, he may have tried to enjoy Maya in the past, but now he's achieved spiritual knowledge and a sense of renunciation, and he's leaving Maya aside. Someone may question, well, the literal meaning of the word aja, goat, she-goat for aja, and aja is male goat, that's plain enough here. Why can't we just use the literal meaning? Why do we have to stretch it and use some secondary meaning when the literal meaning fits? So the answer is no, it doesn't really fit. It doesn't make a very substantial purport of the verse if we're just talking about three goats. Now, this is not a book on zoology. This is a book on Vedanta metaphysics. So just talking about what three goats are doing doesn't fit the context. And there are specific adjectives here describing these three goats that identify them as material nature and the two kinds of jivas, not just ordinary goats. Then someone may, after being defeated with that objection, someone may raise another question or another suggestion. Nature is presented here as unborn, therefore she must be independent. She must be the independent controller, the actual creator. And no, this is replied to, even though she doesn't have any birth, still she is not independent, and she's simply an expansion, an energy of Brahman. The jiva and nature are eternal, but they still expand from Brahman eternally. They don't have independent existence. And they don't, because they don't exist independently, they don't act independently. This is the Chitta-Chitta-Beta-Beta philosophy, that even without being born, even though the jiva is eternal, still he emanates from the Supreme Person. And even though the Lord is emanating all these energies, he's not diminished. He doesn't become inferior because he's giving off all these energies.
Here, Krishna means black.
Krishna means black, yes.
Is that
a mode of ignorance?
And is Krishna's name have anything to do with his black?
That's one way to explain Krishna's name. He's named after his color. Shishupal took that as an excuse for insulting Krishna.
Yeah. One of the things that criticized Krishna for.
Okay. Nature is one. Point is made here. There's one eternal being. There's one unified power of material nature. She's controlling everything. Everything, even though material life seems to be very incoherent and out of control, and there doesn't seem to be any justice, everything seems to be tending toward chaos in the material world. Actually, material nature is totally in control. Everything's under control. There's not many different natures. It's not that every thing has its own nature and there's conflict and chaos. There's one nature, absolute, perfectly in control, under the authority of the Supreme Person. And what are her offspring like? Sadrupa. They share her qualities. Qualities of Prakriti are the qualities of the three modes, sattva, rajas, and tamas. Happiness, mixed happiness and distress, and plain distress. This is what you experience in these three modes. They come from material nature, and all living entities take part of these, they share these qualities in different ways, different combinations. The conditioned soul, he's bewildered by his desires and the reactions of his work, which go back so far that no one can trace out their history. So his karma is also unborn, at least from the material point of view. He's unborn, his entanglement in this world has no visible origin. And he's trying to follow Maya. He's taking his direction from Maya. Instead of taking his direction from the Supreme and from the Vaishnavas, the servants of the Supreme, he's taking he's getting the direction of his life from Maya, who's in the lead and he's following. This is from the word anushete, lies down next to. Anu means following. He becomes a slave of Maya. Whereas the other jiva, the jiva who has become liberated by enlightenment that comes from hearing the instructions of a pure devotee, he's relieved from the blindness of this ignorance, and he could leave Maya aside, not at all interested in her. Okay, text number 6. Yes.
You just talked about he was going to be detached from the issues. Is that alluded to the eternal male?
Yeah, those are the two. One male is lying down, one of the goats, one of the male goats, is trying to enjoy the female goat, the other one isn't. This is the jiva who's in bondage and the other jiva who's liberated.
So if you return to, you know, the comparison of karma and soul?
Not according to this interpretation. Someone might interpret it like that. The next verse talks about that, about the jiva and paramatma, the contrast between the two of them. The which? No, the female is material nature. She's female because everyone's trying to, the conditioned souls are trying to enjoy her. The female is enjoyed, the male is trying to be the enjoyer. There are two males. Everybody's, all three of them are eternal. The two males are the two different kinds of jivas, and the female is material nature. She's giving birth, she's the mother giving birth to all the creatures in this world, giving them all their material bodies. And now another metaphor, very famous. And this verse comes from the Rig Veda. Next one, number 6. Dva suparna sayuja sakaya samanam vriksham parishat swajate tayor anyat pitbalam svadati anashnananyo bichakashiti. Two companion birds, constant friends, live together in the same tree. One of them considers the tree's pitbullen berries sweet and tries to eat them. The other does not eat, but simply observes. This is the verse that originally comes in the Rig Veda. Of course, the tree is the material body, and the two birds are the jiva and the paramatma. Jiva is trying to... They both are living in the same body, but for different purposes. The jiva bird is taking this material body because he wants a field of exploitation. He wants to enjoy the fruits of that tree. The other bird is his friend, is just there to accompany him and look out for him. He's not there to eat the berries. Both jiva and paramatma, both atmas, come into contact with material nature, but the jiva is trying to enjoy it. That's the difference. They're called sayuja, which we translate as companions. But you can understand it in another sense. Yuk means to be joined with. So they're joined with each other as friends, but also both of them have spiritual qualities. They both are endowed, yujyate, with spiritual qualities. They're both eternal, they both have consciousness, they both have potential for a blissful life. Not that only God can be happy and the jiva can't. The jiva who becomes a pure devotee, he enjoys more than God. So the full potential of Satchitananda life is available to both. They both have these basic spiritual qualities. Jiva is not God. He can't create the whole universe. He doesn't have infinite anything. But in his own right, he can enjoy perfectly, and he can have perfect knowledge, and he's eternal. There are friends, Sakaya, because they're never separated. As long as the living entity is living in this world, the Paramatma will accompany him. No matter where the living entity goes, no matter what type of body he takes, the Super Soul will follow him. He's that good a friend. Both of them have the spiritual quality of knowledge. This is the basic quality of a living being as opposed to matter, consciousness. It's not that we are consciousness. Consciousness is our quality. We have consciousness. We are life, living being. Consciousness is a quality of life. But that's a quality we share with God. He's a conscious being, we're a conscious being also. So they're both considered like birds, because the bird has wings. The consciousness and other spiritual capacities of the soul, these are like the wings. With his wings, a bird can fly. He can move around. Similarly, the living entity, with his knowledge, his consciousness, and his intelligence, he can move around in this world and accomplish things and fulfill his desires. A dull stone doesn't have any desires, what to speak of fulfilling them. A creature with very limited consciousness, like a plant, a vegetable, may have some dull desires but can't fulfill them. He may not like the cold weather, the wet weather, but he can't do anything about it, and he doesn't really clearly understand his situation. But the living being who is becoming self-realized, or the eternal Lord himself, that spiritual knowledge gives the power to fulfill desires. So like that, like a bird with his wings, living entities, the jiva and the paramatma, have the wings of their spiritual consciousness. They're both embracing. The word parishwaj literally means to embrace. They're both taking shelter of the same tree, the body, material body. But the super soul is there just to be the helper, counselor of the jiva. The jiva, and thus he takes up residence in the heart of the jiva. The jiva is trying to enjoy the material body, whereas the Lord is not. That's their difference.
So he's trying to eat the fruits of the tree, which he thinks are swadhu, or sweet. But that pleasurable quality of the fruits of material existence, the fruits of material enjoyment, that is just conditional pleasure, an occasional temporary pleasure. But because he's foolish, he tries to enjoy it. He tries to eat these fruits. Other bird he's not eating, he's simply watching. Regulating everything, sanctioning everything as a quiet, quiet witness. Okay, here we have a couple of references from the Vedanta Sutra. There's one sutra, the first chapter, second part, sutra number 8. The sutra is Samboga Praptir Iti Chena Vaisheshya. Translation. It is claimed that Brahman shares the jiva's experience of happiness and distress. If it is claimed, that is denied on the grounds of their differences. Because someone says, well, the supersoul is also in the body, so you must also be experiencing happiness and material happiness and distress. That makes him imperfect. In other words, when God becomes a supersoul, he becomes inferior, contaminated. That argument is denied on the ground of the differences between the jivatma and the paramatma. Baladi Vidyabhushan explains that in the Govinda Bhasha. Samboga is the word here. The argument is because of samboga, because they're enjoying, both of them are enjoying in this body, the jiva and the paramatma, are both experiencing. Paramatma is not dead, he's alive, he has his senses. He's experiencing the pleasures and the suffering of the living entity. He's sitting there in the same place. He's got his senses, so he also experiences. And samboga means, sam means together, like sankirtana means chanting together. Samboga means enjoying together. The paramatma is sitting down, just like sitting at someone's dinner table. You're enjoying the meal. You're sharing the meal. He's sharing the material life with the jiva, sitting at the same table. But the answer is no. The Lord, the jiva is suffering and enjoying material fruits of this life. But the Lord is not, even though he's sitting there. Why is that? Because of the difference between the two of them. Here's the idea, says Baladeva Vibhushan. It's not simply contact, connection with a body, that is the reason for your being entangled in material suffering and enjoyment. It's your subservience to the entanglement of karma that makes you a sufferer and enjoyer. And the Lord has no karmic involvement. He has no material desire. Anashnam, as stated in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, Anashnan Anyo Bichakashiti. One of those two birds of the tree is not eating the fruits. He's simply witnessing. Or as the Lord himself states in Bhagavad Gita, Baladev goes on, Namam karmani limpanti name karma pale spriha. There is no work that affects me, nor do I aspire for the fruits of action, Krishna says. Fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, verse 14. Or, as stated in the Katha Upanishad about the Lord, about his special position, different than everyone else. Yasya brahma kshatram cho be bhavata kodanaha vidyur yasyo pasechana kaitta vidayatrasaha. Who can know in truth the position of him whose boiled rice is the Brahmins and Kshatriyas and whose condiment is death? He's devouring everything. The Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Yamaraj, death, is the achar, the condiment. So don't think of him as an ordinary enjoyer. He's devouring the whole material existence as his lunch. He's not affected by ordinary material suffering and enjoyment. Okay, then Okay, another one. On first chapter, third part, sutra number 7, Govinda Bhasha. First, the sutra. Stityadana Byamcha. Also, Brahman and Jiva are distinct also because of their remaining still and eating. That sounds cryptic, but I think we have a hint what that means. One of the two birds is standing still, the other one is eating. It's alluding this sutra saying because of standing and eating, that if someone reads that out of context, they won't know what it means. But understanding that there's a reference to the verse we're reading now from the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, it makes sense. And Baladeva Vijayabhushan explains it that way. In this context, we read in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad about the two birds sitting on the tree, one of them eating, the other one not. He gives a little further explanation, we won't go into that. But he gives reference to this verse as explaining the sutra, what it's talking about, being still and eating. Because of this, this is a reason for understanding that Brahman and the Jiva are different. Because one of them is eating, the other one's not. One's trying to enjoy this world, the other one isn't. Okay, then there's one longer explanation. In the second chapter, third part of the Vedanta Sutra, Sutra number 41. And first, the commentator, Baladeva Vidyabhushan, explains the argument that the sutra is answering. There's this verse, Dvasuparna, about the two birds in the tree, in the Shvetashvatara Upanishad, and other Upanishads also. There in that verse, it seems that the Lord is one of the two birds and the Jiva is the other. But there's some certain doubt about this. Is it that the Lord, the one bird, becomes covered by Maya and then he becomes the Jiva, the second bird? Or is the Jiva separate? Is he an autonomous, separate being, like a ray of the sun? Does he have his separate existence? Is he real, or is he just an illusory manifestation of the Supreme? Mayavadis would say, no, only Brahman is real, the Jivas are not real. Everything that has duality is unreal. There is no separate existence. The other philosophy is, no, the Jiva is separate. He's an expansion of the Lord, but he has a separate existence. And like the ray of the sun, he's emanating from the Lord, but he's not just the Lord. So the doubt is, which one of these is fact? Looking, arguing on the basis of these scriptural statements, like this verse here about the two birds. Well, someone will suggest, we have to argue that the Lord is simply covered by illusion. The Jiva doesn't really exist, it's just an appearance. It is nothing different than the Lord himself in this disguise. Just as it's stated in Upanishads. Verses quoted here. Gata samvritam akasham niyamane gate yata gato niyetana akasham tadva jiva nabopamaha. The sky becomes covered by a pot. But when the pot is carried from one place to another, it is the pot only which is moved, not the sky. The Jiva can be compared to this. So the Jiva is considered just the Supreme himself. There is an appearance of part of the sky being delimited. There's a pot sitting there. And it seems there's a small sky inside the pot, but it's not a separate sky. It's the same sky, it's just the pot is there. And we think there's a different sky, a little sky inside the pot. And you take the pot and move it to another place. The sky hasn't changed. Pot moving around doesn't affect the sky. But still we're thinking this little sky is moving from here to there. It's just an illusion. Like that, this verse from the Upanishads seems to say that Jiva is nothing but an illusion. and he's nothing other than the Supreme. So arguing on that basis, someone suggests no, and also on the basis of a very famous statement in Chandogya Upanishad, Tattvamasi, you are that Supreme. There are statements like that in the Upanishad. So, on the basis of scriptural evidence, someone is presenting the suggestion that these two birds are not separate beings. Only the one bird is real, the other one is just an imaginary expansion of his. So, Vyasadeva in the sutra answers this suggestion. And he says in the sutra, Amsho nana vyapadeshad anyata chapi dasa kitavari tvam adhyate eke. The jiva is Brahman's part. He's a separate part. Because of their various designations. There are descriptions. Jiva has certain kinds of qualities. Brahman has different kinds of qualities. They're not the same. This is also established in another way. When some read about servants and scoundrels, there's a statement somewhere in the Upanishads about servants and scoundrels that further explain this difference. So, Baladeva Dibhushan comments, the jiva is the part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. Just like a ray of the sun. He's separate from him, but he emanates from him and he's completely dependent on him, on the Supreme. How is this? Why? On what basis do you say this? What's your evidence? Because of their different qualities. One of them is the creator, the other one's created. One of them is the controller, the other one is controlled. One of them is the basis of everything, the other one is dependent. One of them is the master, the other one is the servant. These two beings have become like friends and entered into various kinds of relationships, super soul and jiva. But they're different. They have their different qualities, completely different roles. And there's another way. There's some scriptural evidence that establishes this fact. There's a famous statement. Brahma dasa, brahma dasa, brahmimi kitavaha. The Upanishad that apparently is talking about Brahman being everything. But it says, Brahman is these menial servants. You look at some, you know, street sweepers. They say, Brahman, this is Brahman. These street sweepers is Brahman, are Brahman. Brahman is these menial servants. Brahman is these menial servants. And Brahman is these scoundrels. You see some robbers. And you say, that's Brahman also. Those robbers. Dacoits. So, analyzing this logically, these designations that Brahman is the sutras and Brahman is the dacoits, that can't be understood as defining the essential nature of Brahman, that Brahman is a dacoit or a sudra. The Lord himself is not created. He's not a material manifestation. And the Supreme Lord, who is perfect in all spiritual qualities, he never becomes a sudra, he never becomes anybody's slave, anybody's servant, he never becomes a scoundrel. So it's only in a secondary sense that Brahman is the sudras, Brahman is the dacoits. They're his energies, they're living entities who expand from him. But they have their autonomous existence. And the fact that they're sudras or scoundrels, that's their problem, that's their karma. It doesn't diminish the glory of Brahman. And that is proof that the jiva and the Lord are separate. Because the Lord remains always perfect, the jiva becomes degraded into various material conditions. I'll give you one more verse to cover. Verse 7. Continuing this metaphor of the two birds in the tree, which, samane vrikshe purusho nimagno anishaya shochati muhyamana Jushnam yada pasyati anyam isham asya mahimanam iti vidarshokah. As long as the living entity remains entangled in this shared tree, he helplessly suffers and is confused. But when he notices the other one in the tree, the self-satisfied Lord, the living entity achieves his own glory. Then he is freed from lamentation. Very significant. This is a description of the basic principle of devotional service. This is what devotional service is about, recognizing that the Supreme Lord is your eternal friend, and you have failed to give your attention to him. And the solution to all your problems is to give your attention to him again. This is Krishna consciousness. And this is being taught in the Rig Veda. The previous verse was in the Rig Veda. This verse of the Upanishad is directly based on that verse also. So the original Vedas are teaching devotional service. The jiva, conditioned jiva, is bewildered and helpless, out of control, because he's trying to enjoy separately from the Lord. He's trying to enjoy material nature. His real identity of bliss, of being the eternal servant of the Lord, has now become covered over by ignorance because of his rebellion. He's living in this body, which is called vriksha, tree. The verb vrasht means to cut. The tree is called vriksha because it's liable to get cut down. So anyone can come with an axe and cut him down at any time. He can grow for 150 years, and one morning someone can come with an axe and cut him down. Like that, the material body, having lived so many decades, can simply be cut down at any moment, just like the tree. So therefore the body is called vriksha here. He's covered over by ignorance, identifying with this tree body, thinking I'm fat, I'm thin, identifying with his body in various ways, and therefore experiencing the miseries that come with the body. But when he attempts to become again God conscious, to become aware of his friend who's sharing the body with him, the Supersoul, the Lord is pleased by any endeavor in this direction, even the slightest endeavor. Jushna means pleased. When the Lord is satisfied with our attempt to approach him, then our life becomes successful. Then one becomes glorious, and he realizes his own glory, and becomes free from sorrow. The jiva and the paramatma are both living in this body, both taking shelter of it. But the jiva, his problem is that he's identifying with the body, thinking that it belongs to him. It's his, meant for his enjoyment. Therefore he's suffering. Whereas the other bird is eternally free because he doesn't have any sense, any such false sense of proprietorship. The bird, the conditioned soul who's trying to enjoy this body, he's helpless, anishaya shochati, and lamenting. Even though he's actually an eternally free spirit soul, he's creating his own lamentation by his false identification. It said, the word is nimagna, immersed. But the commentator said it's like a gourd, an empty, dry gourd, floating on top of the ocean. It's actually floating on top. It's not drowning. Like that, the living entity is floating on the top of the ocean of material existence. He's being bounced around by the waves, but he's actually free. And he can regain his contact with the spiritual atmosphere anytime he likes to. But he's lamenting, thinking, I can't do anything. My son has become a nonsense. My family is all dying. My property is stolen. He's lamenting in so many ways. but it has nothing to do with him actually. He's actually free. Then, there may be some time, when because of pious credit he has earned in his previous life by good works, he obtains the mercy of the Lord, especially through the Lord's devotees. And then he gets the seed of Krishna consciousness. He can begin to realize the presence of God in his own heart. The Lord is Jushna in the sense of fully satisfied, self-satisfied. Or it means that he's served by his devotees. Jushna can mean satisfied, it can mean served. So the Lord is both. He's always satisfied, he's always being served by so many devotees. And he's the supreme controller, Isha. When one finally comes to the advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, of being able to directly see the Lord, then you'll realize the Lord's glory and your own glory. Then you'll be fully satisfied. Then you'll be free from lamentation. That's hinted at in this verse. Asya mahimanam iti vijashoka. Although it's not explicitly saying that you have to become Krishna conscious. It doesn't mention Krishna. Doesn't mention any name of God. But it's a basic principle of devotional service, that when you turn your attention to God, then you'll realize your true glory and then you'll be free from suffering. Anything less than God consciousness will not free you, will not give you liberation. So the knowledge that has been talked about through all these verses is being clearly identified here with devotional surrender. With God consciousness, not just knowledge of impersonal Brahman or of anything else. Knowledge of one's relationship with God, knowledge, awareness of one's eternal friend in the heart. That's the knowledge that Sri Tathagata has been talking about all along. From that knowledge comes real liberation. Okay. Are there any questions?